Distress. So if you smell something, we banish. I wore all my chains tonight. See them back there. Is everybody's mic on?
Hey, Lynn.
Okay, good evening. I'd like to call the Wednesday, May 8th, 2019 meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order. And may we have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Pogel?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Austin?
Here. And let's please join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, agenda review. I know the first thing we'd like to check and see if we can move closed session to the end of the meeting. Does everyone agree with that? Closed session? Okay, so yeah. Closed session will go to the end of the meeting. Is there anything else on agenda review?
President Austin, members of the board, we have a revised staff report for item 8B. None of the totals are changing, just the note at the bottom that's highlighted about the checks being reported out. Instead of check 55701, it is 57701. And that is the only change.
Okay, thank you. So do we approve the agenda as presented? Or is it in the closed
session? I make a motion we approve the agenda as amended.
Second.
Okay, roll call.
Vice President White?
Here, yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Repogle?
Yes.
President Austin?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to public comment. This is a chance for the public to comment on items that are not on the agenda. If you wish to speak, please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and I wanted to kind of direct your attention to your future agenda items, and one that I've been looking for your board to weigh in on is the state park impacts to OCSD. I know some months ago you talked about Mr. Ogren and Ms. Repogle were going to collaborate on something, but I didn't see a result from that. Maybe there was one that I missed. But I'd actually like to see your board take a political stance on what's happening with the Public Works Project. Public Works Plan Project. There's a whole lot of noise about the Oso Flaco, which I absolutely agree with. That is a ridiculous idea to open that up to off-road access and the campground and the go-kart racetrack. I mean, it's kind of absurd what's being proposed there. That is a pristine, beautiful place on the planet. But what I'd like your board to do is consider that your very own Pier Avenue could be a pristine, beautiful place on the planet. And if there's going to be continued vehicle access to the beach, that there's a compromise, that we find a better way to get it there. One that doesn't disrupt your community, one that doesn't disrupt the environment, and that you all put your heads together and you come up with a solution. The coastal development permit that was granted in 1983 was for temporary use of Pier Avenue. And 1983 was a very long time ago. And that needs to be resolved. And while the district has facilities that are impacted by the use and the traffic and the trash and the lift station that you don't want blocked by cars backing up and if it needs some repair, there's a political will and a political wind that you as a political body can jump on board. Have the conversation. I don't know where that conversation would go today because I've watched your board for over 10 years and I've seen you change. And I think the political winds are changing and the activity that's gone on at the beach recently changes it even further. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment, public comment? Okay. Seeing none, then that will bring us to our special presentations and reports.
Could I just make one comment responsive to Ms. Tucker? It doesn't seem like there's any movement near term on the State Parks Public Works Plan, but at the July Coastal Commission meeting, which is in San Luis Obispo, staff is going to bring forward the annual review of the coastal development permit. So ahead of that meeting might be a good time for our board to weigh in on that. Okay, I believe it's July 10th through 12th.
Do you remember the day in July? I think I heard you say.
I believe it's July 10th through 12th.
And I think our meeting is on, I thought it was July 10th. Is that right?
Yes, 10th through 12th. Well, you and I could meet as we discuss to review the impacts. Ahead of it.
Okay. Thank you, Cynthia. Is there, let's see, we'll go to staff reports now with Field Supervisor Tony Marchino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Marchino. Lopez is currently at 59.3% full, which is 29,307 acre feet. We had zero SSOs for the month of April. Now, the stats I'm going to give you for water delivery, Lopez just changed last month, so it's the beginning of the water year, so it seems a little funny because we've already pumped 97 acre feet since the beginning of the year. Lopez has delivered 33 acre feet, and we've gotten 11 acre feet from state water. So we've had our daily rounds, weekly samples, 8 work orders, 7 USAs, 6 customer service calls, 1 after-hours call-out. That was for 1324 17th Street. Their service line blew apart. It was the old polybutylene blue pipe. So we completely replaced it and installed a new one. We're really working heavily on the hydrant maintenance so we can do directional flushing since all the valves in the system have already been exercised. I don't have any stats for 311. I will bring that to you next meeting. But we have filled up 2 roll-offs at the airport with the support of the sheriff that have been out there getting that cleaned up. Weed abatement at the yard. We get backfilled 17th Street, got it all paved, so we're already out of that job. We had a sustainable utility management class yesterday, and it gave all the operators 8 hours of continuing education, go towards our licenses at no cost. All right, the emergency generator is at our yard currently, so I know Vice President's happy about that. All right, we are still doing meter replacements. We did door hangers. And we're Director Rapogel, there's going to be a tour at 2:30 Friday. You're all also invited to tour the water yard at that time, Friday at 2:30. Any questions?
I don't. Is anyone on the board having questions for Tony?
I have none.
President Austin, may I interject something? If you're all going to tour the water yard, perhaps we can stagger your times for anyone interested, just to avoid having three of you there at the same time.
Right. We won't. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. But you're all invited. We can stagger times.
We'll stagger it.
Absolutely.
Come some other day.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tony, good job. We don't have Chief Lieberman's not here. General Manager Paula Ogren, do you have anything?
I do, President Austin, members of the board, members of the public. A couple items to report on. As Tony mentioned, the emergency generator is on site, and I've essentially completed the bid documents, so I'm ready to submit those to go out to bid. The final item I have to confirm, and I've been on the phone with Caltrans, is whether or not we have to have a Caltrans permit, because even though we're not going to be touching Caltrans sidewalk or affecting the road, if they have to bring a crane in order to pull the generator off of a flatbed and have traffic control and everything. So the Caltrans permit engineer wasn't too concerned, but he asked me to talk to the inspector. So it's one of those items that may not require a permit, might just require some advanced coordination, but that's the last thing that I am getting confirmation on before going out to bid. And so I'll also be turning my attention to the bid documents for North Swing and Pershing pretty quickly here. Our Prop 84 grants, which have been funding our preliminary engineering on the water system improvements, the Water Resource Reliability Program, We've submitted amendments to the county that have gone to the Department of Water Resources because we have cost savings on the scope of work and want to be able to use some of those savings for design, including getting reimbursement for the designs that Canon has already done for the Highway 1 waterline replacement, as well as the North Swing Pershing waterline replacement. Legal counsel and I met with the NCMA group for some strategic planning, I suppose, lack of a better word. Underneath our agreement with the other NCMA agencies, Pismo, Arroyo Grande, and Grover Beach, in the judgments and stipulations and judgment for the groundwater basin, we're supposed to be reviewing our NCMA agreement, our groundwater management agreement, every 10 years. So it was originally incorporated in, prior to 2010. It was reviewed at 2010, and so now we have to do a review at 2020, determine whether or not we believe any amendments are appropriate in, again, the NCMA management area. And so we just initiated that, and certainly that'll be back in front of your board at, sometime in a 6-month to 9-month schedule, I'd estimate. Met with the city managers and Chief Lieberman on Five Cities Fire Authority, obtained an initial draft on some JPA amendments that the city of Arroyo Grande prepared. So, again, legal counsel and I will look at that, and I committed to the group that we would provide some edits in response to that. And that's kind of leading into the fact that on a week from Friday, Five Cities Fire Authority is going to be doing sort of their final review of the strategic plan that was adopted in 2017. The current estimates of, the 5-year implementation is not implementing all the measures that are included in the 5-year strategic plan, but the Five Cities Fire Authority is going to take its final look at it on the 17th to see whether or not there should be any modifications to what is going to be included in the implementation program. And if that is concluded on 5/17, then we might change our schedule for future agenda items for Five Cities Fire Authority. We were originally intending at the next meeting to do the review of the county report on fire and emergency services. And I know President Austin has something to report out on the Board of Supervisors yesterday. June 12th, we were going to then do a review, an updated review of the Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan. So if the authority concludes on the 17th, then I'm thinking that maybe what we do is immediately at the Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan and switch and wait till June 12th to look at the county report. Because getting the revised, if there are any revisions to the five-year plan, implementation plan for the strategic plan, then as soon as I have those numbers, or we have those numbers, Celia is working on the tax analysis where we're going to be introducing some of the formula concepts workshop today. But it would be nice to be able to get ahead of the actual number crunching associated with that just to make sure that we're getting it done earlier as opposed to later and not, you know, running into any time constraints come October. And I would be glad to answer any questions.
Anyone have any questions for?
No.
No. Okay. Then we'll move on to, there's no one from the Sheriff's Office here, so we'll go on to our next reports, Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. So, Director Gibson, do you have any?
No, I had no meetings to attend.
Okay. Director Villa?
No.
Yes, I attended the REC meeting last Wednesday. There was no RWMG meeting. A main topic or presentation was on the Lake Nacimiento and Lake San Antonio Interlake Tunnel Project. The purpose of this is to transfer water from Lake Nacimiento to Lake San Antonio for increased storage. The level at which that transfer would occur is contentious because of recreational users of Lake Nacimiento. Another issue is that the cost of fish screens that would prevent invasive species from going from one lake to the other may be prohibitive and not economically feasible. But there will be public meetings this summer, and if there's a Prop 18 vote, it would be in the spring of next year.
Cynthia, did they indicate an estimated cost of the project?
They may have, but I did not put that in my notes.
And the Prop 218 vote would be just for Monterey County property owners, I believe. I don't think anybody in San Luis Obispo County would pay for it.
I think that's true.
Okay, that brings to me, and I did attend the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting last week. So on our agenda, we are going to schedule our meetings now to once a month. Won't start till June. We will have another meeting in April. And then if we know we're going to have another meeting, we will go ahead and announce it at the meeting that we're at so we don't have to call special meetings. So people will have plenty of time to know. It's just we've had a lot of very light agendas, and I think we'll save money by going to once a month. And we had... regarding our redundancy program, send out for the bids for the construction. And we had a very large group of union workers from the South County come to the meeting. And they are requesting that we instate a project labor agreement for the redundancy project for the contractors. And this is something I hadn't heard that much about, and I don't think a lot of people had, but it's called a project labor agreement, and it's a pre-hire collective bargaining agreement with one or more labor organizations that establishes terms and conditions of employment for a specific construction project. So public contract code authorizes public entities to enter into project labor agreements when these agreements have a specified list of contents. The district is a public entity. So we discussed it. We had a lot of public comment, a lot of main thing is we have all these men and these tradesmen in our area, in our three communities and all over this county that need to work. They want to stay home and work here and keep the money at home. And so it was a very, very interesting. We're going to go ahead and there's a lot of time frames and things that we have to make sure, and they seem to think we could do it, so it was we're going to go forward with that and work on that. The other, we had a financial update on the redundancy project. It's moving forward, but still the construction's anticipated to start in October to November this year, 2019. And it's projected now to cost $27.9 million. I think I reported that last time. It's significantly higher than the estimates in 2015 is partly due to the honing of costs that occurred, the actual design phase, and then partially due to construction cost inflation. So the good news is, based on the updated projections, the rate increases previously adopted are adequate to support the redundancy project financing with no need to adopt additional rate increases at this time. So that's the good news. I guess that's it. Let me see. The plant's running well. Let's see. Yeah, I guess that's all for the sanitation district. Thank you. So is there any public comment on the special presentations and reports?
Julie Tacker, and I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting and was impressed with the idea of a project labor agreement. The question I haven't resolved yet, and maybe you could answer, Linda, is because the negotiations with the agreement may take some time, I'm not clear if those criteria or whatever is negotiated then has to be folded into the bid documents, and then wouldn't that slow?
That's something that they're talking about.
It would slow that down too.
It was a big concern, and they said we're going to get it done in 30 days.
Yeah, but that my question really is, the bid documents then need to reflect that.
Right.
So I don't think that would be incorporated in 30 days. I think just
probably
the negotiation.
Right.
So that puts the bid out a little further, which then would put the start date out a little further.
That was one of the concerns.
That is a concern, because then it's right into the rainy season, and how do you start digging? So that's my only thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other public comment on the reports? Okay, seeing none, then we will come to consent agenda, which is the review and approval of minutes for April 24th. And the review and approval of cash disbursements. And on that we have the correction of the check number, right? So any motion will be with the correction of the check number. So is everyone any discussion on the two consent agenda items?
I make a motion we approve the consent agenda.
I'm going to get public comment first.
We can move it in a second and then have public comment.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Now we can open up the public comment. Is there any public comment on the consent agenda, the minutes, and the cash disbursements? Okay. Thank you. Seeing none, then we have a motion and a second. Can we get a vote, please?
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villan?
Yes.
Director Polham?
Yes.
President Alston?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to business items. We have 2, 9A and B. Is there someone here? Is there going to be a presentation from the sanitation district? You are?
Yeah.
Okay, so we do public comment prior to the for both of these? It says.
On both of the items, I'd recommend public comment
after okay.
Presentation.
Each
yes.
one, right? Let's do it that way. So let's open up with Pub 9A, an introduction of a proposal by South County Sanitary Service, Inc. to increase solid waste and recycling rates by 10.06% to provide for notices to be sent pursuant to Article of the California Constitution and to set a public hearing for June 26, 2019. So,
President Austin, members of the board, Item 9A is the introduction to the proposal by South County Sanitary Services to increase solid waste and recycling rates. And we have a PowerPoint here. And there's also extra ones on the table. So the request requires a Prop 218 process. Today is to set the hearing for June 26th, the second meeting in June, as a public hearing date for protests. The notice in the agenda package is to be sent out tomorrow by South County Sanitary Services to fulfill the 45-day notice requirement. The first request the district received was in September 2018, and that was for 13.36% increase. This prompted the cities of AG, Grover, Pismo, and the CSD to contact William Statler to request a rate review on the request. Mr. Statler has performed many rate reviews, some of them being here at this district and other cities. The last one we received from him was in 2015 for the increase that South County Sanitary Services had requested in 2015. The rate application was amended four times with William Statler and the cities and the CSD, and the final increase came to the 10.06% that was received this March. So the rate review put together by Mr. Statler, it reviews the revenues, the rate structures of South County Sanitary Services, the trigger of a possible cancellation of the services from South County Sanitary Services, the possibility of modifying the rate setting manual that's used to adjust the rates, and then to also answer the question of why costs are increasing. And he does this, and the cities do this, and the CSD, by analyzing the franchise agreement and any amendments that have been proposed and executed by the cities and CSD. The audited financials of South County Sanitary Services are analyzed for 2016 and 17. The rate setting process manual that all the cities use is also analyzed during this process. The rate application that we received to initiate this process, and then rate surveys of other communities is used to analyze this. So Mr. Statler used the following approach and questions for the rate review. The questions being, should the rate increase be granted? How much does the cost to the required service level do we need to provide? Are their costs reasonable? What are the reasonable amount of level of return for South County Sanitary Services on these costs? So South County Sanitary revenues and rate setting objectives are set forth in our franchise agreement with South County Sanitary Services. And this is done via the rate manual that we've talked about a couple times. And this is something that Mr. Statler, he identified as needing update. It's from 1994, and it's something that should be looked at. The revenues that South County Sanitary Services need, they need to set so they are fair to the consumers and the hauler. They're justifiable and supportable. They ensure revenue adequacy and ensure rate stability. The rates need to also be clear for the customers and the provider. So the rate structure. Almost all of the community's rate structures will result in similar costs for the average customer. But they need to do the following. They need to promote source reduction. They need to be fair within classes of customers. They need to be environmentally sound, be easy for customers to understand. And the original rates were designed to reflect the cost of the service for Oceano. In some communities, it's for the cost of disposal. But for us, it's the cost of service. So South County Sanitary Services provided the types of customers and the containers that Oceano customers use. And this is a breakdown of them. Almost all Oceano customers use the 96-gallon container for green waste disposal. Almost half the users use the 64-gallon for garbage. And almost half the users use 64-gallon for recycling. This graph also, or excuse me, table also shows the different rates that the South County communities have. This one's for Oceano only. Later we'll have a slide of all the other South County sanitary customers. So for the 32-gallon container, the increase would go from $14 a month, and these are monthly costs, they are billed bi-monthly, similar to us. So it'll go from $14 to $15.41. For the 64-gallon containers, it'll go from $20.13 to $22.16. And then for the 96-gallon containers, it'll go from $39.40 to $43.36.
Thanks, Chef. Carrie, maybe we can pause on this one, because I know Director Oplogle had some questions regarding how the rate structures work. And the concept that the 64-gallon is not twice as much as the 32, and the 96 is not three times as much as the 32. In the city of Pismo Beach, that sort of 1-2-3 ratio does exist. And then earlier in the presentation, you did the contrast where some of the agencies, the rate structures are more based on cost of disposal, so that would be more like Pismo. And then others, like more like Arroyo Grande, I think, are on the cost of collection. And then Oceano and Grover are kind of in between the two different approaches. And so since our Carrie also followed up with Mr. Statler as to the history of, you know, how Oceano's formula was approached. And it certainly dated back to the beginning. And I'm not exactly sure when the beginning was. It was
1994. In the 90s.
And so then the proportional rates. And what we did is we wanted to kind of show, Carrie reached out and got the statistics then on how many customers are at the different service levels. And on the garbage bins where we see the 42% of the customers are using the smallest cans at 32 gallons and 47 at the 64, with only 11% at the very large 96 gallons. So we've got almost 90% that are at either 32 or 64. And I would imagine that there's some differences there because of individuals who are maybe living alone or with one person versus the larger families. And certainly average occupancy in Oceano is a bigger number than a lot of other communities. So, there's somewhere that those statistics seem to sort of make some sense. What we also showed is the existing rate is $14 for the 32-gallon, and it's an extra $6.13 to get the 64-gallon versus another $19.27 to get the 96. So clearly the existing rate structure does a lot to encourage people from using the 96-gallon, but there's really not a lot of difference between the 32 and the 64. What Carrie mentioned is that some of the recommendations for Mr. Statler are really kind of twofold. One is that methodology that's used in order to evaluate whether the rate structures are appropriate or not dates back to 1994. And when he is here and when the South County Sanitary Services representatives are here on June 26th during the actual formal public and protest hearing, Mr. Statler can get into those details some more as to why he thinks it might be appropriate to update the methodology. The discussion so far is that updating the methodologies is looking like it would be maybe split 50-50 between the public agencies and South County Sanitary, and then of course our public agency share would be split with a number of different agencies, including Arroyo Grande and Grover and Pismo Beach, and maybe even Napomo.
It would be Napomo, Avila, and then a couple areas in the county.
Yeah, so we don't know yet what our cost-saving percentage would be. But our basic thought is that if your board wants to consider modifying the methodology, whether you want to go to the PISMO approach or the Rio Grande approach or sort of stay where we're at right now, that under the franchise agreement, that would be a district-initiated request, and so we would end up paying for that, as opposed to when the South County Sanitary is asking for their proposed request, they end up paying for all the consultant costs associated with that. But it hasn't been updated for a long time, and it does have some policy implications. When you go to, you know, something more like the PISMO model, you are going to promote some more, conservation or source reduction, more recycling. Unlike water, where that always seems to be a good thing, the challenge with garbage is that the offsetting, if there's a pro and a con, we're changing the methodology. The pro is to promote source reduction. The con is that it can also have some health and safety impacts because we know that in some of the major cleanup events that we've had in Oceano, one that was probably about 7 years ago that I know I participated in, if people aren't putting their trash out and they're keeping it in the home, we witnessed some pretty bad situations. Certainly the fall cleanup that the board has been promoting for the last couple years and paying for the costs helped to reduce that health and safety factor pretty significantly. But overall, the recommendation is that if your board it wants to look at that rate structure, that we think it would be good to do it concurrently with the review of how the methodology and the evaluations might happen as well.
Thank you. I think you answered all the questions that I had. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and just a side note, I know when you're out there, you see a lot of different things. You see, a 32-gallon trash bin, then you'll see a 64-gallon recycling, and then the 96 green waste. It's all based off what you use in your garbage bin, and they confirm that for South County Sanitary. Yeah. So the trigger option. In Section 8.3 of the franchise agreement, it allows for the district to have the option to terminate the agreement if the new rates increase over the accumulative cost of the living increase. This rate increase before your board is 6.74 over the trigger option. In 2015, this had also happened, not quite to this extent, but your board waived the right for this option. And it was established by the REZO that was adopted in 2015. So we would have to do this something similar for this year, and that would be at the hearing that you would see that REZO.
Are we missing anything on that slide?
It might have not carried over.
Oh, yeah.
There was some images. Pablo got creative.
Carrie vetoed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, one of, as Pablo said, the findings in this rate review was the need to update that rate setting manual. And as he said, 50% of it would be done by South County Sanitary Services and the rest by the communities, and that would be split a number of ways, not just AG, Grover, and Pismo. And we would come back to you with the funding formula of that and also an RFP, and Mr. Statler had provided some consultants that would be available to do that. I don't know about available, but he suggested some. And then this slide here is the increases for all the communities in South County Sanitary, and you can see we're one of the lower, and it shows the $14, the $20, and the $39 that we are at currently for the three containers, and the 10.06 increase there. And then this is the increase breakdown. 4.5% of it is for the recycling via the materials recovery facilities. And this is where we used to send most of our recycling to facilities out of the country, and we no longer are really doing that, and so they have to update the material recovery facilities here, and that is the large cost. That's the majority of the increase. 2.2% is for the truck fleet depreciation for South County Sanitary Services. 1.6% is for the food and green waste recycling program, and then 1.8% is overall labor, fuel, and maintenance costs. And with that, we'll take any questions, comments.
I don't understand why exactly we would consider redoing the whole rate structure. And it was my understanding that one of the reasons for the rate structure is because of the picking them up. I mean, that's the real cost in the rural area, you know, between Oceano and Halcyon. And I don't quite understand why we would. I don't know. Is it that inequitable that we need to do that?
So it's not anything that would be done right now. And it is discretionary to your board. You know, it's clear that some agencies go based on, you know, the theory of disposal costs, and the others go based on theory of collection costs. When we think about it from a collection cost standpoint, there's hardly any difference in collecting, you know, 32-gallon versus a 96-gallon. It seems to me that it would be a pretty hard financial model to really get into the details of how much is, you know, collection costs versus disposal costs, even though it could theoretically be done. But again, I think that there's some value of evaluating how the numbers might look different. That 32-gallon cost might come down a little bit, and that might help, you know, especially some of the individuals who are on fixed incomes. It's hard to imagine that the 96 would go up that much because there's so few, you know, only about 10%. I also think that in general that might be a relatively easier evaluation to do, again, concurrent with the methodology. Mr. Statler's work around this time, it's a lot of work because he had to get into the audited financial statements and he had to really look at the basis for the total revenues that they were seeking to collect.
Yeah.
But to look at some formulas about changing 32, 64, and 96-gallon can rates and everything, all that stuff is already done, and so there's a lot of math involved in it, but it probably wouldn't be that difficult. So, again, I think that we can ask Mr. Statler to speak to that a little bit more and the garbage company to speak to it on the 26th. It's not a direct actionable item on the 26th. But to get the board's general feedback is good. And again, I just don't anticipate it would be a very costly endeavor because it doesn't require getting back into the audits and doing all that other work.
Okay.
Yeah, and looking at Pismo's, their rates are quite interesting. I mean, it goes from 15 to 30 to 46.
They are the example where the 64 is twice as much as the 32, and the 96 is three times as much.
Yeah, and what is the reason for Pismo being that much higher?
Oh, in terms of totals?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because how much of the costs are allocated between Arroyo Grande, Grover, Oceano, and Pismo is something that, you know, again, is sort of based on the history of it. When we see that Oceano is essentially the least expensive out of the four, I tend to not ask that question.
Just a point of reference.
Yes.
Anyone else have anything to discuss before I open it to public?
Yeah, I just wanted to note that, what page is it here? Page 30 of 76. They're increasing their tipping fees at Cold Canyon for recycling from $7.80 per ton to $67.50 per ton, which the $67.50 seems in line with the table below of of tipping fees at other facilities. So I don't really have a problem with that. It just seems like a bit of self-dealing there because Waste Connections owns the landfill and owns South County Sanitary. They say they believe that their rates are not subject to regulatory review and the basis for setting them is proprietary. So
there is provisions in the franchise agreements because they are related parties. We do have the ability to go in there and audit that information. And I think Mr. Statler can speak to the level of work that he's done. What they have had is a little bit of a disagreement with the county and the Integrated Regional Water Management,
Waste Management.
Because certainly the rate reviews in our collection franchise agreements are clear. The Coal Canyon Landfill, again, all part of Waste Connections, Inc., has stated that there isn't an approval process that they have to go through for the landfill. And they had some disagreements with the county on that. And then they ended up getting soft, the Waste Connection, Inc. did, and sort of working through the county. But what we're seeing that they do is they're reiterating that statement that says, oh, but we're not technically subject to somebody setting approval rates. But where we do get them is exactly where you're speaking, Director Ropogal, is in the related party transactions and the fact that as collection through the franchise agreements and related parties, we could go in there and press them on that particular issue if needed. The cost increases that we're really seeing with the recycling, though, have to do with China's ban on taking recyclables. And, of course, I follow sort of what's going on in the world with respect to recycling and the impacts that it's having. And it's a pretty bad situation over in parts of Asia where the stuff that we're attempting to recycle here in the United States and in some of the other countries are really becoming waste products in parts of Asia, and they're finding themselves in the ocean, and it's a pretty bad situation. So we are definitely looking at higher costs associated with recycling because of that. And then the sort of disturbing news is that there's a number of agencies that have actually stopped recycling services because of the cost increases. Overall what we're looking at, the 10% translates into, depending on the level of service, between $1 and $2. With the most significant impact being the ability to continue with recycling, I think that's certainly important to continue to promote.
I'm well aware of those impacts. In terms of making sure that we're helping customers to produce the kind of quality recyclable stream that's necessary currently, is there anything we can do to promote that, or is that something that South County Sanitary does in terms of letting people know what is and isn't appropriate in the recycling bins? Because I think that's changing.
It is. We know that the level of contaminants in the recycled stream has been increasing. And we can do it, through our own budget and get information out, and we can also coordinate with South County Sanitary in order to get information out, and we'd be glad to do that as well.
The hearing might be a good opportunity for outreach on that, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions? The garbage franchise is mandated to take the recycling, aren't they? Or are they?
Yes. In the franchise agreements, they are mandated to implement the recycling programs.
And the green waste?
Yes. And in fact, your board has great discretion on what you can mandate essentially at any time. If you want them to change programs or to do something different in terms of recycling and both, green waste composting, The way that the franchise agreements work, though, is that if your board directs them to do something different than they're currently doing and it costs them more, then you have to, you know, allow the rate increase for that as well. But the agreements from when they were originally established, again, in the 1990s, have always provided local agencies with the ability to, you know, direct the garbage companies with respect to those programs. But in turn, we have to recognize if there's a cost impact, then it has to be paid for.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we should have a refresher on what can and cannot go in the recycled bins. It's been a long time.
So, Carrie, let's make sure that we talk to Jeff and ask him to be prepared, you know, to at least do an overview of what goes in and what is recyclable and what's not.
During like notice that people can put on their fridge or something, yeah. A little card that tells them this yes and no. Because I know people are getting lazy and just, I see it all the time.
Milk cartons. I never can remember.
Okay, are we all done here? I can open this to public comment now. Is there any public comment on this item?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I actually, this is a little different. This is something we did in Los Osos with my board when I was on the board. We actually didn't take the entire franchise fee and reduced our services as a garbage company. We weren't the company, we're just like you. But we had a part-time solid waste person. We had pickup days, the big chipping day, that kind of thing, that we spent our franchise fees on as a service. But we backed down what that would be and applied the delta to the rates overall so that the rate increase was still happening from the garbage company, but the citizens and the ratepayers didn't feel it as much. It was fractional. It was tiny. But when I look at Oceano and what you're facing down here, I think you have to look under every grain of sand. You don't have rocks. But you really have to look at how best you can spend the money so the ratepayer gets the biggest bang for their buck. And if there was some way that, because I saw that your revenue from your franchise fee is $96,000 expected this year. And that's, I can't imagine that you would spend all of that. Once you would have a healthy reserve, you wouldn't have to use all of that and you could apply it across the rates to keep that rate just a little bit lower. Because Linda mentioned a little while ago, South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District adopted a rate increase structure 3 years ago, and it's going to apply to this July, so another rate increase. You are looking at fire tax. Everything's gone up, not going down. So if there was a way that you could do what you can, even at your board level, some years ago, the board gave up all their stipends to somehow help the ratepayers overall, because that little bit of money for you goes back to them if you don't take it. So I'm just trying to be creative and share with you what we did up there. Thanks.
Okay. Any other public comment?
Gary Hamill. I've been a member of this community for nearly a quarter century. And I've noticed in the last 3 years or so that the quality of the pickup has gone down. They skip our 2300 block of Ocean Street on a regular basis, leaving us with our recycles full, our greenways full, or two of them full. I am on a first-name basis with the office manager, Gloria, because of these problems. And I don't know if they're mechanics of their arms are breaking down or whatever, or the extra 3 or 4 seconds to actually shake the can a couple of times. So if anything's like got a little suction to the bottom or whatever, it took me 7 weeks to get rid of some trash from December. It was like right around Pearl Harbor Day. And I didn't get rid of that trash until the first week of February. It was thick 1-inch styrofoam that was in sheets about so long and about this wide. There was only two of them in there, along with a lid of one of those plastic containers that was the container that we had lost it. So those three things sat in my. I finally broke into smaller pieces, and over the course of 3 more weeks, the last ones finally got out of my can. And I've noticed that the past experience that I've had, which was no problems, has been exacerbated the last 3 years. No matter how many times they call, threaten not to pay my bill because they're not picking up regularly, having to give them hell on the phone because they want me to wait another week until they can get a truck around. You know, that's just not acceptable when their rates keep going up. Also, I noticed that the food and green waste recycling's gone up 1.6%, but I understand that they don't even recycle that anymore because of the fear of the certain varmints that get into citrus trees that they may have those clippings in there. So they don't even do that anymore. They don't even mulch it anymore because they don't want to taint a whole batch of mulch. So they just take it over to the regular trash. They're not even recycling anymore the green waste because of their fear of the mite or whatever the hell it is that gets in there through the. Anyway, I just wanted that to be said.
Thank you very much.
Citrus psyllus. Citrus psyllus.
There you are. Thank you very much.
Any other public comment?
That was public comment. Is there any other public comment? Okay,
so in responding to a couple questions, so for the gentleman on service concerns, you know, we really encourage you to call the office because we do have performance criteria in the franchise agreement itself, and we can encourage them to make sure to be more responsive to our customers if they're not meeting our customer satisfaction. Also, the district has implemented through our franchise fee revenues that we collect from them additional programs that we're in charge of, which, as your board knows, has helped, you know, address some of the illegal dumping in the alleys and whatnot. But, you know, the district is now set up to support customers in multiple ways, so we encourage you to call us. With respect to the composting facilities, that has changed. But they recently have built that new composting facility off of Buckley Road near San Luis Obispo Airport. So all of that green waste is now going into a state-of-the-art composting facility that is also helping to generate power. And I can't remember if it's methane generation or what. But so they've got this new state-of-the-art facility as well. So things have changed, but they are composting. And, again, encourage you to contact our office. And for everybody who's listening, that number is 805-481-6730. And you can ask for either Celia or Nicole. They'll jump right on it. With respect to the comments regarding the board's options with respect to your franchise fees, and I think that there is a link provided, Carrie, maybe you can confirm. But the new League of Cities implementation guide that was just published this week. And on page 22, there's a practice tip. And what that speaks to is that currently most of the agencies in San Luis Obispo County charge a 10% franchise fee. And I know that Napomo CSD has done, as Ms. Tacker had mentioned, also for Los Osos, where some of the agencies to offset the immediate impact of a fee increase or a rate increase have reduced their franchise fees. And what the practice tip under Prop 218 really encourages is that that in this situation, your board would, you know, support you, go through the protest hearing, see if there's sufficient protest, but follow the Prop 218 procedural requirements. And it's subsequent consideration by your board as to whether or not you want to lower your 10% franchise fee down to some lower percentage. And to the extent that the district does have a fairly decent amount of reserves right now in the garbage fund, that is something that would be an option for your board to consider. I wouldn't propose that we would consider that detail at the protest hearing, but certainly that would be a type of direction at the protest hearing that your board could direct staff and legal counsel to look at. But the practice tip under the new, and I'm going to just point it out because it's really brand new. This month, the League of California Cities has published a new Proposition 26 and Proposition 218 guide. And there's a lot of court cases references in it. And I've read through it once quickly, and I'm going back and looking at different sections. But so far, it's the best a guide that I've seen for Prop 218. And what the practice tip it basically says is that if you want to reduce your franchise fee, you do that as a separate action, and you can sunset it. And the point is that when your action to reduce the franchise fee, when you can choose to reverse that or you can choose to sunset it, and there's no Prop 218 implications. And so if, for example, your board said, hey, we can reduce our franchise fees for a year or two, utilize some of the reserves in the garbage company, you could set it that says we're going to reduce them below the 10% for 2 years or whatever the appropriate time period is. Adopt a resolution. We inform the garbage company, and therefore the bills go down for everybody, or they don't go up as much as otherwise planned. And then at the end of that term that your board identifies, then the franchise fee goes back up to 10%. And, you know, again, I think with the level of reserves that are in the garbage fund, it's something for your board to consider. And it also helps with phasing in a rate increase because, you know, 10% immediately versus by reducing the franchise fee, you can reduce the immediate impact of the rate increase. And so, again, I think that those are certainly well within your board's discretion and given the level of garbage reserves, garbage financial reserves that we have, it's feasible for your board to do that. And there's good legal precedence on doing that without running afoul of Prop 218.
Okay, is there any more questions or comments?
Right now.
So then we've done with public comment. So it's recommended that we provide for the attached notice to be mailed to the South County Sanitary Service. So is that we vote on mailing that or we just provide direction?
I think the staff recommendations would be the easiest motion on that.
Okay. For the public hearing. So we'll just look for a motion then to take staff's recommendation on this item.
I make a motion we approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Vice President White?
Yes.
Director Pogan?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Olson?
Yes. Okay, now we'll move on to item 9B, discussion of Proposition 218 parcel tax and assessment options for fire and emergency services, including those previously approved for Los Osos, Cayucas, Cambria, with board direction as deemed appropriate.
So, President Austin, members of the board, and members of the public, and Carrie's going to help me with the PowerPoint on this. We're going to have relatively few slides, and then we have this. 11 by 17. So we're going to use this. Today is sort of a workshop approach where we're going to look at this. And if your board wants to give us some direction, general direction, or if we just talk about it and we run with informal direction, all of those work. But we figured that, again, it's October is the deadline for your board to take formal direction on putting an item on the March 2020 ballot. So here we are in May, about 5 months ahead of that, and we want to make sure to address a number of the issues early so that we don't get up against that timeline. And so we have three exhibits, and Carrie, maybe jump to the first slide. So attachment C is the formula, and so these are the tax formulas that how is it that we determine how much each parcel in Oceano would pay if a special tax is approved in March? So we have to develop a formula. And we have three exhibits. One is the Los Osos, one is the Cayucas, and then one is the Cambria. And all three of those measures were approved in those communities at, you know, prior time. The Cambria example is an assessment approach. And so we're really not going to talk about that too much today. It's still an option, but the reason why we're not going to talk too much about the assessment approach today is that would not be on the March 2020 ballot. An assessment is a mail-in ballot, and it's a ballot that only property owners vote on, and so it doesn't go on, you know, the normal election cycle for registered voters. Again, referring back to the Prop 218 guide, just as a little bit of a background, an assessment vote to pass has to be approved by 50% plus one of property owners, where each property owner votes in proportion to the proposed assessments. So if I own an apartment building and my proposed, let's say I had six units in that apartment building, and Jeff owned the apartment building next to me, and he only had three units in his apartment building, and therefore his assessments, he wants 12 units. He wants, no, he only gets three. So my assessments are going to be twice as large as Jeff's assessments, so I get twice the number of votes. And so it's, I always characterize it as one vote per $1, and then however many dollars are you're being proposed for, you get to make that many votes, and you might be able to vote twice as much as the neighbor, or if you both own single-family homes, you're going to end up paying, you know, or voting this the same amount. So in assessments, it's in proportion to the proposed assessments, and to pass, it has to be 50% plus one of those votes. Versus a parcel tax, which does go on the normal election, and it's proposed for March of 2020, that is a two-thirds voter requirement. And so that's what we're focusing on tonight. And the two examples that we have are Los Osos and Cayucas. So real quick, what it shows here on the Los Osos example is the residential single-family dwelling unit is five units per dwelling unit, and so that's benefit units. And it's pretty common in these approaches to try to benchmark things in comparison to a single family home. And so down the rows we see that apartments have three units, so it's less than a single family. Mobile home has three units and so forth. And I'm not going to go into the details of those, but the idea is that, and this is part of what Celia is working on, for each and every assessor's parcel number, we have to assign the number of benefit units. And then based on the Five Cities Fire Authority estimated costs minus the amount of property taxes that we believe we're already going to collect and figuring out how much more is needed, we take that revenue requirement, we divide it by the number of benefit units, and that tells us the cost per benefit unit. And then for each parcel, if it's a single-family dwelling unit, we would multiply that cost per benefit unit times five. Now, so this is a Los Osos example. Carrie, maybe jump to the next slide, where this is the Cayucas fire protection. And on that point, what they did is they equated single-family residences to four benefit units each. So they have a slightly different approach. And what Carrie produced is this 11x7 handout so that we can really kind of work off paper in a minute and kind of compare the two. Because neither one fits like a glove for Oceano, and there's some differences. But that's the general approach, is you look at the different types of land uses, you develop a comparison of one type of land use to the other type of land use, and you come up with a determination of how many benefit units should there be for the different types of land uses. And then that's the formula. Now, what I think that would be appropriate, and because we have the time, today is just a workshop, and then once we know where the need, the revenue requirement is going to be after Five Cities Fire Authority does their final review on the 17th, and then Chief Lieberman and staff are able to crunch the numbers and give us the updated five-year cost projections, if anything changes. We'll come back to your board with the detailed calculations. And then what I like is to send all of the property owners, to send all the property owners notices that says, hey, based on a tax formula that's being considered by your board, you would be assigned X number of units based on your land use, and the special tax then per year would be Y, you know, whatever that dollar amount would be. That way we can reach out to the property owners and get any feedback from them. If, for example, maybe the county records that we're working on states that it's a single-family residence with a second residence on there, and maybe there's an error in it, and the property owner can give us feedback on the error. Likewise, we might find some of the property owners that say, hey, we don't think that the formula is fair for our type of land use. So, again, we have time to work that interaction with the property owners. But today is just sort of being our study session and talk about what we're seeing in these two formulas. So, Carrie, maybe the next slide. Oh, and this was, again, the Cambria example. So on the assessment side, they showed, you know, a relatively smaller amount for vacant lots. That ends up being five benefit units for single-family homes less than 3,600, 7.5 benefit units for homes that are more than 3,600 square feet, and then multifamily residences per dwelling unit. They have their numbers there, and then commercial ranges. Now, the difference between a special tax and assessment, or one of the other differences, is that an assessment approach, like for Cambria, you have to hire a professional engineer, and they have to do a benefit assessment analysis to determine what's appropriate. With respect to a parcel tax, your board has much more legislative discretion on that. We aren't held by the statutes or the Constitution to do it a specific way. It provides flexibility that you could keep it very simple. Vacant lots pay so much. Developed lots pay a different amount. You don't really have to get into the details of the different types of land uses. And that greater discretion that you have is theoretically one of the reasons why it requires two-thirds vote. If your board or any board were to get too wild and crazy with these formulas, you know, the amount of voters who might support it is going to go down. So there's a natural sort of check and balance. Obviously, you can't develop a formula that's like arbitrary or capricious. But the idea that tying it into land use and it provides the general sense that it's a more equitable formula, because we know that different types of land uses are going to have different types of demands for emergency and for fire and emergency services. So, next slide. So this is Los Osos, and now you're kind of starting to see what the bigger one. So what we did is we highlighted those types of land uses that did not show up on the other schedule. So highlighted for Los Osos is the ones that we don't see on the Cayucas schedule. And then next slide, Carrie. On Cayucas, we're highlighting the ones that we don't see on the Los Osos schedule. And so there's probably a good chance that we need to look at, all right, how are we going to consider some of the categories from Los Osos and some of the categories from Cayucas? When I look at the two of them together, it seems like they pretty well encompass the land uses in Oceano, and I wouldn't imagine that we need to really go much further than looking at these two examples. So I don't think that this is on the slide, right? But that's what I want to do now is I want to kind of turn to the 11 by 17 that everybody has handed out and just sort of start sharing some of my observations on the two different approaches that those communities took. So again, the land use classifications that are not highlighted means that there's a similar land use classification for both the Los Osos Schedule of Benefits as well as the Cayuga Schedule of Benefits. And there's a lot of consistency between them. Now, in Los Osos, for a residential single family, they put 5 units per dwelling unit. And in Cayucas, it's 4. So that is a little bit of a difference. And then in Los Osos, they get into, for residential, into a higher level of detail. So if you have a second home or a second dwelling unit on your property, the second one doesn't cost you 5 units. It's only 4 units. Versus in Cayucas, all of the units are 4 units. So Los Osos really just charges that extra 1 unit for the primary residence in a single-family residential situation. Los Osos also speaks to like condominiums and duplexes, triplexes, or fourplexes as being 4 units versus apartments and mobile homes as being 3 units. And in that particular case, sometimes I don't really see a lot of difference between a condominium and an apartment. You know, I suppose it's all dependent on how it's developed, but when I think about the two of them, they often look the same. It's just what is the ownership about, right? The apartments are where you have an owner and rents them all out, and a condo is where everybody, you know, owns their own unit and everything and may or may not rent it out. We do often see in various types of revenues that local agencies implement for services like Oceano has, lesser of a dwelling unit equivalent for mobile home parks. And that's often because the number of actual occupants in a mobile home park is less than an apartment or a single family residence. And we see consistency there between Cayucas and Los Osos, where each of them provide the mobile home parks with less units per dwelling or less benefit units per dwelling unit. And so I kind of want to pause as we're going through these different sections because if the board has any feedback on some of this applicability toward the residential units, I generally think that the idea that the primary residence should be at a slightly higher level because a lot of times those second, if it's an accessory dwelling unit or a second unit on a piece of property, might have lower occupancy, and the primary single-family residential units are typically larger. So I like that slight distinction. But again, it's really sort of the board's discretion. And I like the Los Osos approach where, you know, we do identify condos and duplexes and triplexes and fourplexes, apartments and mobile homes different. The only thing I might think there is maybe an apartment should be 4 units per dwelling unit, like in Cayucas, and so it'd be 5 for the primary residence, 4 units for condos and the duplex, triplex, fourplex, apartments, and then 3 benefit units for mobile home units.
Yeah,
I can agree with your ideas.
I would say apartment 4 if you're looking at it that way. Yeah,
I'm just a little surprised that there isn't some more objective standard for the schedule of benefits, that there's so much subjectivity here. I mean, isn't there a way to tie it to data, like on how often different types of land uses avail themselves of fire and emergency services, or how much of the resources they use, or some kind of data-based way of...
Well, I can certainly, you know, share it with Chief Lieberman to look at it, but when it comes to parcel taxes... you know, unlike benefit assessments where you have to have the engineer's report and you have to do the nexus analysis, or even on water service charges and on sewer service charges and property-related fees and charges where you have to be able to allocate the cost in proportion. When we allocate costs to the different customer unit, we have to do it on a proportionality basis. But in parcel taxes... that type of rigor or requirement simply doesn't exist. And it is really kind of hard. And here's the thing, is because a parcel tax is still a tax. So whether it's a general tax or a parcel tax or a sales tax or an income tax, the idea of taxation is that there doesn't have to be a direct correlation to benefits received. And so instead, it's somewhat of a legislative process of trying to develop general equities between different land use categories. And in fire and emergency services, it really still comes down to we just don't know, you know, really where they're going to be responding or what house is going to burn down. So your board does have some discretion. Getting feedback from Chief Lieberman, I think, would be a good idea, and I can certainly, you know, prompt him along those lines. But I just haven't seen on parcel taxes that type of nexus analysis that we see in other forms of revenues.
Yeah, I understand it's not a requirement, but I just think somebody somewhere, not necessarily in this local jurisdiction, has crunched the numbers and come up with some evidence-based way of apportioning this. What I'm getting at is that, to my mind, in terms of fairness, if you tell me, oh, well, your particular type of land use uses this much of the benefits typically, and that's why we're allocating it this way, that makes sense to me. Versus, it's just kind of subjective, and we're all sitting up here, and well, maybe apartment complexes don't have to pay as much as condos, but why is that? Because they're sort of the same building, so that's all I'm saying. I think it would help with the fairness argument if we had some data behind it.
Yeah, and, you know, again, I studied them, the 8 different proposals that went through last year, and in the history of the various Prop 218 items, it's just really you just don't see the big study associated with parcel taxes that you do in other areas. So we can do some searching and everything, but it is that idea that taxation is part of its objective and part of it's to try to develop fairness, but it just doesn't calculate out the same as other types of things. And so it is a little bit of a relativity type of a situation.
I would say it's just generally democratic because we don't anywhere here charge cars, and many of our calls for service involve cars, you know, car crashes or that kind of thing, and they aren't here at all represented. So, I mean, it's just a general sweeping democratic thing everybody gets to pay. You know, I mean, I'm just saying, there's other things. I wonder, you know, schools aren't paying much in relationship to their call numbers. But then again, we're all paying for the schools already. So if you look at, you know, it's almost a double taxation if you're paying for the school and then you're paying again for the school. You know, so maybe schools shouldn't be charged at all. I mean, you can play with that all day long.
The schools.
Huh? The one I'm looking at is in Cayucas, motel room sleeping only. I don't quite understand. That's 2 units, and then with housekeeping, 3 units.
And how do you track that?
Yeah, and why?
Are you sleeping?
Yeah, better be sleeping. So I would not generally, you know, I don't know how they developed. There must have been something in Cayucas. Maybe Cayucas was thinking a lot about their vacation rentals, or
yeah,
although those
guess.
Are motel rooms. I'm not sure. Versus in Los Osos, we see motel/hotel bed and breakfast. It's just 3 units per rental room. And I tend to like that because it keeps it pretty straightforward. And I, again, I don't know how in the Cayucas example they distinguish between sleeping only and housing.
Well, what about vacation rentals? They're not separate here.
Yeah, so vacation rentals are really going to fall under residential single family.
And then do you have a count on, say, preschool, daycares, some of these others? Residential care facilities? Do we know the numbers?
That's part of what Celia is working through right now.
Okay.
And so, fortunately, Oceano is a relatively small community. So, of course, we know where Boys and Girls Club is, and, you know, we know where some of those other We know where the churches are. But that's also part of the point of sending all the property owners what our determination is early so that they can point out in the event that we didn't quite get it right. I find that on the Los Osos one where we're talking about commercial manufacturing at one unit per 300 square feet or less versus in Cayucas, they take different types of land categories and they just assign a certain number of units. So, for example, in Cayucas, restaurants have 10 units. A delicatessen has 6 and a retail store has 4. So we know that there's a number of proprietors in Oceano that have a store and a delicatessen. Well, in that case, my read of the Cayucas is that they get 4 units for the retail, 6 units for the delicatessen. They're at 10 units, which is the same as a restaurant. So that kind of seemed to work out to me. We do have service stations here in Oceano. We do have laundromats, or we have a laundromat in Oceano.
Why is a laundromat so high?
That kind of struck me too, right? Because it would seem like...
Do they have fires, a lot of fires from like grease in the dryers or something?
No.
It doesn't seem like they would pose as much of a risk. You know, a laundromat's going to use a lot of water, but it's... I don't...
Certainly a laundromat has no more risk than a service station.
Or even maybe less.
Or a retail store.
Right, because a service station still has gasoline and stuff. So that would be a good one to get feedback from Mr. Lieberman. And the reality is on a laundromat, there's one. Right? So if they were charged more consistent with a service station, for example, those 4 benefit units aren't going to change the calculations, you know, at all, but it probably is more equitable there. So I think about our commercial operations across the railroad track, POVI and those. Because those are structures that could have a lot of square footage, but are they really posing a significant fire risk? Now, maybe, you know, POVI's got chlorine in there. If something were to happen, it would be ammonia. Yeah. Big response. And, again, you know, I know that Chief Lieberman is very familiar with some of those risks, and so we could get some feedback from him as well. Maybe the idea is we just simply go in there and, with the information we know, start doing some, you know, specific identification. Because on the one hand, we have some operations in our industrial area of town that are going to pose higher risks. But some of those structures have all been converted and are going to have, you know, I think that there's one that's a storage warehouse. So it's full of old files and everything, but there's not an actual operating thing. So I think getting some feedback from the chief on those types of structures, because that really is more unique to Oceano than either Los Osos or Cayucas. When it comes to the schools and churches where it's going one unit per 300 square feet or less, I'm not sure that... you know, doing those square footage calculations are the best approach, or even on the preschools or daycares. But in commercial and manufacturing, I think that, you know, some sort of a square footage calculation does make sense, and maybe even distinguishing on the commercial and manufacturing whether it's a passive or an active type of an operation. Going back to the Los Osos schedule of benefits, where they have a property for vehicle storage, 2 units per acre or less, I think that's applicable because we've got the RVs that are stored, you know, here for like Pismo Coast Village and whatnot. I wouldn't see a reason why it needs to be any different than 2 units per acre or less. But again, that land use classification still seems appropriate. In Los Osos, they have the barns and shops over 300 square feet, and in Cayucas, they have the barns and greenhouses. And basically, in Cayucas, it's just saying 2 units each. And in Los Osos, it's saying 2 units per building. So, yeah, it's the same. I was thinking it was saying square footage. So those two match up. Although in Los Osos, it has to be over 300 square feet, which most barns and shops are going to be. But that's even a discretionary of your board, whether you want to put benefited units on barns and shops and some of those miscellaneous outbuildings, because how far does that go? We can have residential units that have shops on them in the back. And a lot of that stuff is going to be hard to pick up off of the county's assessor system.
It might be cleaner to just go by the primary use of the property.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too, because we do have unimproved ag, and in Los Osos they have, you know, there's some good agriculture around Los Osos as well, obviously. And there it says if it's 1 unit per acre or less, and then it says 1 unit per acre with a maximum of 5. So that's essentially, you know, almost saying the same thing. But for every unit, for every acre or less that you have on unimproved agriculture, you're paying a benefit unit. But once you hit 5 acres, then you're done. If you have more than 5 acres, yeah, you don't get charged anything else.
What's unimproved agriculture?
It's the ones without structures on them, because if it has barns and stuff, then the barn is going to get assumed.
So it's farm fields.
Yes. And we'll probably want to look a little bit more closely over at Halcyon on that, right? Because we have some of that ag land does have what the, not a shed, but there's a... off the pike. There is a structure there. There's a commercial establishment going there.
Yeah.
So that might fall well underneath our commercial approach.
And I don't see anything for medical. Maybe I missed it.
There is, but we do have the, how would we do the medical building? Would it be commercial? Just a commercial rate?
I think you're very wise to be doing this all ahead of time and letting people have a say. I think
what I would like to see when it's ready is the full list of the different types of land uses that we have here, because it sounds like there's some things that might not fall on these lists we're looking at right now.
Well, yes, and so because we do need to make sure to clarify that, how would a particular land use fall into these broader categories?
Right.
And that's exactly what we're working on right now.
We have many storage, but I don't, you know, transit container storage and property for vehicle storage, so we don't think we have those. So we need to put one in for mini storages, right? We'd have to.
What exactly is a transit?
I don't know.
Container
containers, those probably you buy those.
Pods?
Pods.
Pods, yeah.
And we have some.
Versus.
A place in Oceano that runs them.
No, but a place that uses them.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them around. People use them all over. But as far as where they store them, we don't have that.
I was thinking maybe it was the big containers that go on the back of a truck. Sometimes those are stored places.
Yeah, that's where I was thinking, too.
We have that, but...
So we take out... We don't have beauty parlors or...
So it's okay to leave some of these things in here just in case we do get a beauty parlor.
Yeah,
and for people to compare.
Yeah.
Compare it.
Yeah.
Well, there is one, too.
Yeah. I just remembered down by. I don't think we have any more cocktail lounges anymore.
But does, if you've got, let's see, wait a minute, do we have restaurants with bars? How do we handle that?
We don't have any.
We have restaurants with bars.
Oh, we have old lawns.
Well, if it's a restaurant with a bar, I think that just falls underneath the restaurant category.
Yeah.
I suppose. Let's see. Cocktail lounges, bars, 10 units each, same as a restaurant. We do have an automotive garage. We don't have the golf course.
Sorry.
We do have recreation because of the lagoon park. I don't think and need to confirm that we can charge taxes on other governmental agencies. On Prop 218, when it comes to assessments, we're obligated to assess other governmental agencies.
You can't assess that, right?
Yeah, I don't think we can tax the others. If we'll, so, you know, we'll do some of that confirmation again. General workshop here. In the Los Osos example, I'm curious as perhaps the schools were indicated to were intended to indicate if there's any private schools. But churches, you generally don't tax either. And so we'll double check as to confirming what we are and are not allowed to tax. But to me, it seems like the two of them taken together cover most of the land uses that we're going to see in Oceano. I tend to want to stay away from square footage calculations. It's just that we might need to do that when we're talking about, you know, our major industrial facilities across the railroad tracks and everything in order to, you know, make it equitable for the size of the buildings or whether it's a structure where there is an activity going on versus a passive structure that's just being used for storage.
What about all the cannabis delivery services? Would they get their own category? And the one manufacturing delivery.
But maybe
service.
They should have their own category because they're high risk.
The highest risk for fire is the ice plant, which company?
Maybe Chief Lieberman could weigh in on the.
Yes,
because
they
risk.
Have been doing a lot of work in Grover. And so I think he is probably going to be able to give us some good feedback on cannabis operations. And I'll defer any puns at this point in time.
I could say that they have met high criteria for fire danger. They're all sprinkled. And I mean, compared to a lot of the other buildings within our area there, I would probably rather be there than in some of the buildings around here.
And again, taxation gets into the theories of the ability to pay, right? And so I think that that's really when it comes to tax theory, there's a lot of different things that can come into play. And so I would generally think that those cannabis operations have a better ability to pay than some of the others. So not like we're going to be able to rest the needs of the fire authority on one or two businesses. But that's a good point.
I think there are four or five of them over on Pike Lane now. So
yeah, and I haven't been following. I'm not even – have they been permitted yet or are they –
I believe one of them is in.
Of Hike?
Over on the end of 13.
Pardon me, Celia? It's in process. Yeah, because that's right, because the fire department is looking at all of the code requirements for it, and then we have to determine whether or not we have any fees and whether or not there needs to be any infrastructure upgrades as well. Okay.
Grocery stores aren't separate, are they?
We don't see them as separate.
We have the one that would be the grocery store and the delicatessen. And then we actually have two grocery stores with delicatessens, so you'd have to make.
Yeah, you know, I think that they're probably falling underneath the retail store option, although they always feel like they're different than retail, right?
Well, then you make like you do restaurants or 10, and then delicatessen / retail store would be 6 and 4, which would make 10, which would make it about, isn't that what we said earlier? But
yeah. So in the Cayucas example where they talk about public buildings, offices, et cetera, for 4 units each per business, I think that's the category that would end up capturing CHC.
There you go, yeah.
But again, I like the idea of being a little bit more specific with CHC in terms of medical facilities, even if it's the same number of benefit units. People sometimes respond more positively, you know, if they can easily see that their land use is covered by a category,
right,
as opposed to loosely interpreted to be within that category.
Well, and there's more than one CHC facility.
Mine's only this or that if you have it.
There's more than one building they're using. There's one across the street from the other one.
Right. And so part of the point of having the general discussion before we start doing a bunch of calculations is that when we get feedback about, well, what if you change this type of land use a little bit or that type of land use? Well, then we have the ability to, plug in some changes in the numbers and see whether or not they are going to have a significant impact on the bottom line. And generally, when we're talking about like CHC or the restaurants and those type of things, there's just not that many of them. You know, most of it's going to be driven based on residential usage. And the primary, the condos, the apartments, the mobile home units, that's where the vast majority of the taxes are going to come from. There is enough, though, of non-residential development in Oceano that making sure that the non-residential development is captured is important. But changes in formulas probably aren't going to swing the costs that the residents are going to be paying or being proposed to pay. Probably won't swing those residential numbers that much.
On Cayucas, they have single-family residents and then multiple-family residences. So is multiple, is that covering, like, the apartments and...
Yes.
Condos, whereas in Los Osos, they kind of broke it down.
Yes.
So is it easier just to call everything multiple family, or?
Well, I kind of like the approach of the residential single family. Oh, and then instead of talking about condos or duplexes and triplexes, you just say multifamily is 4 units per dwelling unit, and then you make sure to call out mobile homes themselves separately.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to add on? Or are we
keep working?
Public comment?
Well, when you do multiple family residents, maybe just put, you put like the example of call it duplex, triplex, fourplex, apartment, condo?
Certainly we can. So what happens this is a table, right? And in calling for the election, your board either has to adopt a resolution or an ordinance. And so in the language of the resolution or ordinance, we can clarify that, multifamily is, resident is condos, duplex, triplex, fourplexes, apartments, essentially anything other than single-family residences and mobile homes. So it's in the narrative that we would provide the definitions or additional clarification.
Okay. So is this the only discussion we have on this? I'm going to do that. I just wanted to...
Yes. Yeah. In the overall, list of agenda items that we have over the next several months, we wanted to make sure that we brought this concept forward and had a general discussion with your board.
So we don't need to go over the chronology or anything?
I do want to point to... yes, I was thinking future agenda items, but we can do it now as well. So as I mentioned in earlier comments, on May 22nd, we were first scheduled to review the county report on fire and emergency services. And then on June 12th, we were going to review the updated Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan. And depending on the outcomes of the May 17th meeting at Five Cities Fire Authority, we might want to flip-flop those two around. By flip-flopping them, then we've reviewed the strategic plan and the cost over the multi-year multi-year projections more quickly, which will then allow us to start calculating the per parcel numbers more quickly and hopefully get back. So on July 10th is the target date for, it says approving new Five Cities funding formulas, and that really should say direction on Five Cities, the funding formulas, because as I previously mentioned, based on whatever the initial direction from your board is, I think it would be good to send it out to all the property owners and get their feedback prior to your board actually approving it down the road a little bit. But ideally, I'd like to be able to take that July 10th date for the tax analysis and move it up to June 26th, just to try to get ahead of the timing as best as possible. I suppose the other items there, I'm thinking about the dates flip-flopping around. I probably should wait till future agenda items, since those relate to LID presentations and preliminary budget review, and I'm anticipating a little bit of changes on that. But let's cover those ones under future agenda items. At this point in time, I'd like to be, I'm probably going to want to move this Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan up, review that earlier. And then the other thing that's not on here that we really have to be doing either May 22nd or June 12th, more likely, maybe May 22nd, is the JPA amendments. And most specifically, we need to make sure to have that together for the adoption of the Five Cities Fire Authority 1920 budget. Based on discussions of the managers at this point in time, we're not anticipating that our costs for next year are going to be any higher than they are for this year. In part, even though the recommendation will be to start transitioning into the new funding formula, the chief and Five Cities Fire Authority has deferred some of the implementation of the Five Cities of the strategic plan, and as a result, the reserves have been built up a little bit, and so the recommendations are going to be utilize some of those reserves to offset next year's cost increase. So again, ideally on May 22nd, but that depends on if we can get our language all straightened out with the other agencies. If not June 12th, your board will need to consider the Five Cities Fire Authority budget, or at least our costs associated with the Five Cities Fire Authority budget, and a JPA amendment on that. And so that covers the board meeting's timeline.
Okay, thank you. Is there any public comment on this item?
Julie Tacker again, and Linda, you said you were at the Board of Supervisors yesterday. I don't know if
I'm going to give a little report on that after public comment.
Oh, okay. That's what I was looking for.
I mean, everybody wanted me to do public comment, so I thought I'd better do it.
Well, but now I can't comment on what you might
so
say.
So I thought I'll do it after, unless you'd like to stop public comment. I can go ahead and do it now if you'd rather.
I appreciate that. I might want to say something.
It was an update, on the ad hoc fire committee, and it was a receive and file with the supervisors. It was just the informational. So if you all remember, the ad hoc fire committee started the special district's fire protection study. It was presented in January 15th of 2019, and it showed there were challenges to the sustainability and impact to the county. So because of the funding issues everybody was facing now and in the next 5 years, so they decided to create an ad hoc committee to evaluate the next steps on how we would move forward. And Supervisor Pishong, Supervisor Gibson, and there were a few of us else were on the ad hoc committee. The Chief Jalbert.
Just as a clarification. So Supervisors Pishong and Gibson are the Board of Supervisors.
Supervisors
ad hoc
on the
committee.
Ad hoc committee,
yeah.
Right.
And so they've coordinated, like they attended the meeting with the Rio Grande and us and everything. But
okay, so out of the committee, there were four recommendations. And the first recommendation was
clarify the county's position on funding for independent special districts. So they recommend the next step on that is to adopt a new budget policy. And they made it very clear the county will not subsidize an independent special district with general fund monies. So it's not possible for any of the districts like ours to get money from the county through the general fund. And if there is any property tax exchange, this will not result in a net fiscal loss to the county. So they have a note here, the funding for independent special districts says, as independent special districts are autonomous government agencies fully independent of the county in governance, the provision of services and funding, the county shall not subsidize an independent special district with county general fund monies, nor should any property tax exchange result in a net fiscal loss to the county. So that's their position on funding, the county's position. And then the number two was to clarify the response to a special district's request for an organizational change for fire service. And they want to clarify that approach. So the plan for services developed in consultation with the affected community and county fire. So this is like the question of what if the county were to take over. So if the county were to get involved, they would determine the appropriate level of service. And the county, they would tell us what service that they would provide. We wouldn't have the option to tell them what we want from them. They tell us what they're going to give. And they will consider all available resources and financing options. And then the third was the request information from agencies on emergency response capacity. And this is what they want the agencies to provide current service level data, which means incident location, response by agency. So they want to know what kind of incidents, where the locations, how long is the response time, and what agency respond, the arrival time of each agency's resources, and the number of personnel that are responded by agency. And then the fourth was to request a final analysis be included in the fire strategic plan. This is the fiscal analysis, and it says they want to expand the countywide fire protection strategic plan. They want to do an in-depth review of service models and funding options for the unincorporated areas. So basically they said with this report, the reason for it, the supervisor comments after the report was that they want to lay the groundwork for fair treatment, and so everybody, all the special districts in the county know where they stand. So this is like a model that this is what we'll do, this is what, you know, we can. And they just said it's a hard reality that the level of sophistication that is needed now, it must be met, and because, you know, we don't have the volunteer fire departments anymore. And so they basically said it's up to these communities to decide what kind of service they want, what level of service, and figure out how they're going to cover the added expense to keep their fire the service that they're used to and that they want and expect. And so it's basically this is what they'll do, which but they think the communities need to figure it out, how they can keep up their service. So that's about it.
I can
what?
Provide some thoughts.
Okay.
So on the idea that they aren't going to subsidize any independent fire departments, that's anticipated because if they don't have governing or managerial control over it, their concern would be that they would be giving out a bunch of money without the ability right. to influence. In the county report, it indicated that Templeton had asked them for a subsidy in excess of $400,000. So I kind of feel like that recommendation was really to address Templeton,
mm-hmm.
that no, we're not going to give subsidies.
No.
I think we in Oceano already expect, I need to be careful, but we don't always expect great, you know, a lot of things from the county. We know that the sheriff is here and the sheriff does a great job for Oceano. But sometimes, like the other unincorporated communities, we feel like we're forgotten, so not getting subsidies is not a surprise for us, even though the county does great services in other areas. The issue about no loss of a property tax exchange or no economic loss, I think, was in response to some of the comments that I gave, because I was curious as to whether or not they would consider trading the sheriff substation for a property tax exchange. And, of course, I was hinting at a sweetheart deal there. And I think that they were basically saying, no, Pablo, that's no different than the Templeton request, even though you're painting it with different colors. There is a no there. On the plan for services, that's specific because, as David Church had explained in the last meeting, that a divestiture or a dissolution, that the statutes, the Cortese-Knox-Hertzberg Act that governs LAFCO, that the local agency, the CSD, in our case Oceano, we would have to develop a plan for service. And that's a statutory requirement. But whatever we might plan, the county doesn't have to agree to it, right? So they're really coming out here and say, don't develop a silly plan and expect us to adopt it. Work with us, because we're going to make the final determination on the level of service if we're going to accept that plan. So they're, you know, that's it. That one makes sense as well. And then on the last point, which is wanting to know response times and some of that other information.
There's a letter they're sending us.
Yeah. And
did
so,
we get that yet?
Yes. And so I need to get that over to Chief Lieberman as well, because that's the type of information that Five Cities Fire Authority is well-suited and I'm sure can respond to pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a letter. It's called Emergency Response Capacity. And so they're sending us on behalf of the county. They want to know what's the district's average personnel, reliability rate of calls, personnel arrival to incidents, how many incidents where you could not respond, how many where two or more firefighters responded, were less than two, how many structure fires, do you allow volunteers? Just all kinds of questions.
So then on the, there was that last final point that in their strategic plan, they're going to look at other options for providing fire and emergency services in the unincorporated area. And I know that part of that is looking at, do they need to do something that's more significant in terms of changes? So San Diego County went through significant changes in how the services were provided in the unincorporated area. And there was a lot of independent fire protection districts then that were either dissolved or, if it was associated with the CSD, the divestiture. But San Diego County went through really some significant changes. I'm not hearing of anything yet at the county level that would suggest the county's going to do any significant changes one way or another. But basically, the board direction is to have that looked at in their strategic plan. Maybe something useful will come out of it in terms of what is that option for Oceano down the road. But in any case, they are well aware of, especially the San Diego example, where they made some really significant changes in approach to how they're providing fire and emergency services.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Anyone have any comments? Okay, I'm going to open for public comment on this item.
Thank you for that. Julie Tacker again. Your exercise workshop on the different fire tax parcel assessment options, I was looking for what Five Cities Fire did in 2014. I think that you need that to see what didn't work and how you can make that better, if that is indeed the direction you're going to go. Because Five Cities Fire Authority did everything you're doing now, and you're doing it over again. And I believe Five Cities Fire did a survey in 2012 for the sensitivity factor of how much money people would be willing to spend on a fire tax for the whole fire area, the three communities. But you can extrapolate that data out for what it meant for Oceano. The same with the actual casting of the number was $66 a parcel. how the benefits worked. It was a little bit more for business or less or those kind of things. That's something I thought you might look at, is how they broke that down in per benefit unit. The other thing is, when the ballots were cast and the vote failed, you can also break that down by community and extrapolate what didn't work and don't do it again. And to be perfectly honest with you, the back of the envelope calculations I've done, Oceano's not going to pass the tax. And I think Mr. Ogren's time, with the few months he has left here at the district, would be better spent negotiating the divestiture and getting the best for Oceano with his contacts at the county and his influence and the years of experience that he has at the county, that is the best you can hope for. If you wait till March 2020 and the vote fails and then you begin negotiations, you're going to have a new general manager that may not have that experience, that wisdom, those connections, and you may not get much. So I think the writing's on the wall, and I think this chronology and the progression that's laid out in front of you should be truncated, and you set forward with divestiture.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
That's some interesting information that just came in. News to some of us new people over here on the coast. I'm Dave Leffler, Oceano resident. Cynthia, to you, I think if we have database information, we ought to find it, if it's available. That's good business, because everybody, if we get to a vote position, is going to want to know why, and that's part of why. So good thinking on your part there. A question about how we do our business currently, and maybe this needs to go to the chief, but inspection and permitting fees that are collected in Oceano, is that part of the budget review and thoughts right now? Because when I was in other places and doing other things besides retirement, we paid local fire departments for their engineers to come out and look at our operations on an annual basis. And that was part of what was required in that area, and that helped to pay for these small, like the Taft Fire Department and that kind of thing. Those fees were really important, and they were a large piece of the budget, and they were set up based on what it cost the fire district to do that work, and then we reimbursed them for that. And it was good business, and it created a safe environment for our people. And so there was monies that went back into the fire service to help locally, and I don't know if you do that now or what's going on with that. So and it may be something that is too slow and wouldn't help us much with this situation. But just a thought, just in sitting here and talking about shortfalls. The other thing is, do we have a guesstimate of the real shortfall based on our strategic plan and what we can expect from the county? And I think we do. And it may be that it would be good to be putting that out in these meetings right now so we begin to understand the whole magnitude of this thing. And maybe, you know, a vote. We wouldn't even want to go for a vote if it's a couple hundred dollars per residence or something, because probably those things are not gonna fly. Just a guess, but I don't know. Do we have a number, or is there something that can be publicized without too much damage, or at this point?
So I'm taking the notes. The general protocol with public comment is in local agency meetings, everybody makes their public comment, and
sure.
Then once okay. Public comment is closed, then we address the questions and everything as opposed to a dialogue, and so I'll be prepared to answer your questions.
Because I've been reading everything that you guys are putting out and the fire service is putting out, and actually it doesn't look as big as I thought it was going to be. but I won't give a number either because I don't know. But I've got a big range, and that's I was hoping to get a better feel for this as we try to go forward to support having our local control and local activities. So, also sales tax from Oceano, where does that go? Do we get any of that? I guess, and then my next question would be, why not? But anyway, just a comment. Just kind of trying to hustle and find ways to have this benefit continue here locally. So that's, and some of our neighbors brought in a thing from the Tribune on 4/25/19 that might be good news for our budget. The median home price trend in Oceano has gone up from $495,000 average in 2018 to now $667,000. I see tax revenue coming up, and that's a 35% increase in a year. Do we need 35% more budget from what we get from the county right now? Now, I know not everybody's going to sell their house, and this isn't going to happen immediately, but just some thinking and some thoughts that some of the people where I live and are looking at. So just some thoughts. So thank you for listening, and thank you for working diligently on this, too.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, seeing that now, Pavel.
I'll go in reverse order of the public comment. So certainly with the increases of median household income, I do think that Oceano is facing a better general property tax allocation than some of the other local agencies, especially City of San Luis Obispo and San Luis Coastal Unified School District that are slated to get hit harder because of the Diablo shutdown. And we already know that we get very little revenue from Diablo, and so that shutdown is not going to impact us much. I think it's about a 2% based on some rough calculations I previously did. But, of course, the challenge, as was noted, that even if median household income, median household sales prices has gone up, sometimes it can get distorted depending on which houses are selling. But that doesn't reflect an increase in the tax base the way Prop 13 is. And, you know, so those houses that do sell are going to be paying higher taxes, but everybody else is still, you know, limited to no more than a 2% increase. And so Carrie and I have analyzed over the last several years what we're seeing in actual property tax increases. And I'd say over the last couple of years it's been roughly, you know, 4 or 5%. But again, over the long term, I would expect Oceano to be doing better than the other local agencies. You know, it's a beach community. We're already seeing increases in property values and getting more than that 2% statutory increase under Proposition 13, I think, is still going to be part of our future. But we can't, you know, really expect real significant increases because of the way that Prop 13 works. With respect to sales taxes, that's right, special districts and unincorporated areas do not get any sales taxes. The only general tax revenue that we get are property taxes, and that's based on Proposition 13 and based on what was called Assembly Bill 8 that was passed right after Proposition 13 was passed, or a year or so later, which said that out of the taxes that are collected in a county, how is it distributed between the different local agencies? That's state legislature. It's not a county discretionary issue. There's been past litigation on it, but it's withheld the litigation. And it's not always fair, but that is the county simply has to follow the rules established by the state.
Is that why the AG Cemetery gets $300,000
a year? Yeah, a couple of the winners. So, and since Prop 13, like lighting districts have tended to be winners under Prop 13 because the increases in property values have grown faster than the increases the energy costs associated with lighting, and even with the most recent conversion to LEDs where the energy costs are going down, but property values are still going up. So there's some of those tiny special districts that kind of were winners. The other winner is that if you were a poorly managed district when Prop 13 was passed, and if you were poorly managed and then you had a high tax rate, well, you were rewarded for that high tax rate because that works into the current funding formulas. So there are some, but again, when it comes to taxes, you know, taxes aren't always fair, so that's the rule of the land, and we get what we get. But we don't get any sales taxes, we don't get any bed taxes, we don't get any transportation occupancy taxes, and we don't get any gas taxes. Those are all reserved for cities and counties that have much broader general governmental responsibilities than we do, and of course that's what helps pay for the sheriff's substation here in Oceano as well. Now, if we do some comparison contrast to the different communities, it's probably not Oceano that's kind of being the north coast of San Luis Obispo County generates by far the most transportation occupancy taxes and bed taxes in the unincorporated areas, because we're not talking about Pismo, which obviously generates a lot. But North Coast in San Luis Obispo County generates a lot of bed and TOT taxes, and they sometimes argue they don't get their fair share of those either. Specifically, then, when we talk about other revenue sources for Five Cities Fire Authority, I think it is, in part of our frequently asked questions, because that's one of the things that Carrie and I are doing during these workshops, is developing, well, what about the inspection and permitting fees? And Five Cities Fire does have inspection and permitting fees. We don't have a lot of development in Five Cities Fire Authority area, so some of those don't generate a lot of money. But I do know that the Fire Authority is looking at how to improve the fee generation. We just know that it's not going to solve the problem. It's going to contribute. So with respect to frequently asked questions, I think that's a good one, too, so that we can make sure that everybody understands that the fire department does get those types of revenues. And then specifically for Oceano, we also get public facilities fees. So every time a new home or a new structure is built or add-on, depending on the size of the add-on, like school fees, there's a public facility fee that's collected. Your board has previously adopted our public facilities fee report. Right now, that we do that in coordination with the county because the county also has their public facilities fees. And so we get a portion of that specifically to help pay for equipment for Five Cities Fire, for Oceano, and then for our Five Cities Fire. And right now, Carrie, 230? Pretty impressive off the top of her head. I was thinking it was over 200, but we've got about $230,000 in reserves for equipment. And so we do collect public facilities fees. It's in our bank account rather than Five Cities Fire Authority's bank account. I don't think that Grover and Arroyo Grande are collecting public facilities fees for fire-related equipment. But, of course, then they get the other types of general taxes like sales taxes and TOT taxes. So I think I hit on the questions. Okay, and then...
Could I add a little something?
Yes.
All those inspection fees are being recalculated, and the expectation is not now, but very soon, it could amount to approximately $70,000 a year. So it includes inspections of hotels and I think large apartment complexes also.
And probably cannabis shops.
And cannabis shops, yes.
I did miss one of the comments, though, is that the estimate of how much it's going to cost for each property. And it's one of those things, we're not yet prepared to give an estimate because once we do, then people are going to, you know, jump on that. But that's where, on our schedule, we're anticipating July 10th, where we will have those numbers, or at least a pretty tight range of those numbers. And that's where I'm hoping to be able to even push that July 10th date up to June 26th. So that's not that far around the corner. But we want to make sure to get the update on the Five Cities strategic plan, so we get updated multi-year cost estimates so that we know what our share of the cost estimates are going to be, and so that we can do that tax analysis. And again, it's going to be pretty soon here, but we just need to beg for a little bit of patience until, again, the 17th of this month, the Fire Authority is going to review that, and then we're going to have budget numbers and everything. Celia is already starting to work on it, so we're going to be there pretty soon. With respect to the Five Cities Fire Authority survey that was done in 2014, I'm not sure if we've posted that yet, but I don't even think I've asked it, but we have turned that over to Godbee Research so that they can make sure they use that as part of their background, and I'll make sure that it's posted on our webpage for Five Cities Fire Authority and make sure to distribute it to all the board members as well. And there's some interesting observations in there. One is that in 2014, we weren't that far off of, you know, still recovering from the recession. Voters can change, but it's not something that I'm going to try to predict as to whether or not the special tax may or may not pass. The idea that I'm always a supporter of community-based decisions, and this decision is a decision for the voters in the community. It's not a board decision because under Prop 13, Prop 218 and everything, our state constitution puts that decision in the voters. I do agree that the earlier we're talking about divestiture with the county, the better off, especially if it gives the voters an indication of the type of services that they might get if, in fact, the special tax doesn't pass. That is a little bit tough because the county may not make much commitments in terms of what they may or may not be willing to do until after they find out about the March election. But certainly in terms of the different options, if it's Five Cities Fire Authority, if it's the county Cal Fire, or if it's Oceano going back to living within its means, what do those three options look like? As best as we can, we have to try to describe those scenarios to the voters so they can make as a well-informed decision as possible. I will say that the discussion right now with the city managers, and I'm comfortable enough to believe that we're going to have a joint recommendation on it, but in the event that a special tax doesn't pass, then it looks like the wind-down would most likely be about a 15-month period, so that the wind-down period would end June 30th of 2021. And that way, whatever we can do in advance in talking with the county, I think is good. Obviously, they're giving direction to update their strategic plan to be more definitive. But we don't control their timing. But we do know that in the event that we're looking at divestiture or living within our own means, that now would look to be most likely July 1 of 2021. So we're a little bit, you know, a little bit more than 2 years out on that. And I think that, again, that report and the survey that was done in 2014 is good background information. I've reviewed it. We'll make sure that everybody gets distributed a copy. And, again, we've already forwarded to Godbee Research so that it's part of their background materials in the upcoming survey that we're doing. But again, I don't really want to prejudge what the community decision is going to be. That's really for the voters to decide. I think I hit everything, but be glad to answer any other questions.
I think that you said it well. Thank you. I think that will bring us to our any hearing items? None. Communications, Tom, any written communications or late written communications? No?
All right. Well, Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors is scheduled to approve the Remina construction contract for the drainage improvements. And we did elect to go for our relocations. We have elected to go as long as it's Remina. Tony and I sat down, and that's where we're going. But that's on the Board of Supervisors agenda for Tuesday.
I think I saw that it has to pass by a four-fifths vote. Is that,
anything
to be concerned about?
Probably not, because that's probably going to be a pretty routine decision at the board. The four-fifths vote would have been because of they have to have a budget adjustment associated with it.
Right.
And so that the budget adjustment is compelling the four-fifths vote. If it ended up having if it was a three-fifths vote, then they would probably delay for a month, incorporate it into next year's budget, and then approve the contract on a three-fifths vote.
Okay. So that'll be not this coming Tuesday, but the following, every other Tuesday?
Their next board meeting, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's the 14th, actually, so that's next
have
week.
One. This next week.
I think that's what the agenda
maybe
said.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah, and when they're really approaching their budget cycle right now, so they might end up having a couple extra meetings.
Well,
I didn't check, but I was informed that it was next Tuesday.
Okay. All right. Well, then I believe we can go back to closed session.
Future agenda items.
Future agenda items.
So going back to page 68 of 76. I described some of the changes I anticipate on Five Cities Fire Authority reviews. Next meeting on May 22nd, 2019, Canon had indicated that they want to come and do the presentation on the LID update because we originally had them scheduled for June 26th, but based on their timing in terms of being able to get work done and hopefully pursue some grants, they indicated that they really need to be here before the end of May. So I indicated to them that we can push them up to the next meeting. So Canon and the LID presentation will be here. As a result, I think the preliminary budget review will push down to June 12th. And those are the two changes that I'm foreseeing immediately with respect to non-Five Cities Fire items. Again, next meeting as well, Category 5 is going to be here for the adoption of the Local Hazard Mitigation Plan. That's gone through all the Cal EOS and FEMA approval processes, so it's ready to get final approval, and they will be here next meeting as well.
Is there anything anyone wants to add to future agenda items?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, can we pull up the Oceano Dunes SVRA impacts on Oceano discussion for the board to some meeting prior to July 10th, and then maybe you and I can discuss that in advance, Paavo.
Yes.
Whenever you think that can be slotted in.
All right, we'll work on that.
And I had a project I wanted to bring up potentially for the future. President Austin and I had a brainstorm on, Oceano Pride, and we have our new coffee house. So we had the idea of taking the old firehouse and maybe doing, a community project with art. And we're thinking something along the lines of like fruit label box art, that would tie in with the trains and this part of Oceano be in the center of commerce, around 1900. So we thought that might be fun to do as a community, and we think we can get some donations. Of course, we'd have probably insurance liability issues, things like that to discuss, but I'd like to see if there's any interest in that.
Did you have any timing hopes or expectations? Because the next few meetings are going to be pretty packed through.
No, we're open to anything.
All right, so
we live here.
I'm kind of, depending on how May 22nd and the two meetings in June go, if we're able to move the tax analysis up to June 26th, July 10th might open up. July 24th looks pretty good right now. As a general note, I try to limit three discussion items. Today we had two, and we're at almost 8:30. And so it's usually two or three.
Real short. Maybe in this time we could get some sample art together.
Yeah.
Do some legwork.
All right, so I'm going to be adjusting these anticipated meeting agenda items, and then we'll look at that too. But I'm guessing it's going to probably be the latter part of July.
Start it.
It's fine.
There's lots of cool. Okay. Well, now can we? We'll go to closed session. Do we need public comment on closed session? Is there any public comment on closed session? You going to announce it first?
Sure, if you'd like. The board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957. This is public employment of the general manager.
Julie Tacker again, and I honestly only question I had was under what subsection of this code are you going into closed session, because it's not identified on the agenda.
Thank you. All right. Are we ready to go? Do you have? Okay. All right, then. We're going to go to closed session. So thank you, everyone, for coming.
Ladies, you going to stay here?
No, they'll leave.